I know you're sitting there going, how connected are these guys? They go on and on and on about their influence in the National Hockey League, how they can reach out and get the stories. But really, where does it come from? Well, for the second straight week, the Chirp with Darren Millard has a captain from a National Hockey League team on a day off. I don't do anything on my day off, but Mark Stone joins us in between games on a total, no practice, anything, but he talks to us on the Chirp with Darren Millard. I've never heard some of these stories before. We're going to chat with him, plus Montreal's changes. I'll tell you why they made the switch behind the bench. And Patrick from Chicago, are you aware of what he's doing and who he is? Patrick from Chicago, a topic of conversation on the Chirp with Darren Millard. Roll it, Bobby.
What are you going to do?
You! Ah! You guys are sensitive over there.
Got hot. Going once, going twice.
Got up.
Cold, got hot.
So we're recording this on the first of the month, and we rolled on Mark Stone yesterday, which was a Sunday, and that's really important because you'll hear him talk about what he was doing on a day off. What do National Hockey League players do on their day off? Mark Stone is just like you and I, if we have control of the TV when my kids aren't watching Scooby-Doo or something like that. Fresh content to your podcast coming up today. Glad you're along with us on the Chirp with Darren Millard. We are providing all kinds of information to you, but the ratings and the subscriptions need to keep coming. And we are into a third month of this thing. Third month, and we appreciate your patronage. So, but if you're new to the pod, like if you're a Mark Stone fan and you're just checking this out, rule number one of the Chirp with Darren Millard, talk about the Chirp. Talk. This isn't Fight Club. We talk about the Chirp. Tell everybody about it. Rule number two, you have to like, you have to subscribe, you have to leave a rating. And if you're on YouTube, click that like and subscribe. You can do it all right there. But really appreciate it. It goes a long way. And after last week, we got a lot of great responses, Bobby.
We made it to March. And as the kids like to say, Darren, smash that like button, smash that subscribe button and help us out.
You know, the first time I heard that, my 10-year-old said, I'm smashing it. I'm like, we just bought you that laptop. You're not getting another one. And then she cleared in. Dad humor. But that was an actual dad like, we have some league happenings to come. Talking about Chicago, talking about Montreal. It's a home game for me here in Vegas today as I'll catch up with Golden Knights captain Mark Stone. Vegas is putting people back in the building this week. I do the Vegas games on television, talking on the radio about the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm looking forward to that as much as anything. 15% capacity. So we'll have that. Also want to say, I asked last week, just going to loop back. I know I'm wandering here, but for the information on why the Boston Bruins wore their 90s gear, a lot of great responses. So really appreciate that. But as for Stone, he's a very interesting player on the NHL fame scale. He's at the top of the mountain in Las Vegas. He's a star in the division and the conference. But when anybody talks about him on the national scale, and I've been on that side of it, there's always the comment that's prefaced with a guy that doesn't get as much attention as he deserves. Every time somebody talks about Mark Stone, it's that kind of context around it. And it shouldn't really be because he is a star and a trophy contender on the individual basis in the NHL. Ottawa's loss with that trade to the Golden Knights is the Golden Knights gain and the 2019 trade deadline. He'll talk about what he brought with him when he was announced as a newest member of the Golden Knights and signed that new contract. And he's the first captain in Vegas in team history on a team with one goal. Like some teams talk about, we want to make the playoffs. Others say we want to go as far as we can. There's one comment all the time from Mark Stone, and that is, we want to win the Stanley Cup. You don't hear many fourth-year franchises say, our only goal is to win the Stanley Cup. I'm familiar with him because of our time with the Brandon Weekings. I wasn't there when he was there, but my dad always kept me up to date with what Mark Stone has done. And I can't wait to introduce this conversation with Mark Stone, a side that you don't get to see very often. So here is the captain of the Golden Knights on the Chirp with Darren Millard, talking a little golf. So thanks for joining us on a day off. Like, what do you do on a Sunday in a jam-packed schedule between games?
I mean, Sundays for me, especially day off, are watching golf. So I just finishing up watching the final round here. Looks like Mark, I was going to pull it off. It's kind of just relaxing. It's nice that we have great weather here in Vegas too, so you can kind of open up the door, chill. I got the sauna in the backyard that I'll be hopping in here pretty soon.
When you watch golf, do you watch with like a wedge in your hand or a putter in your hand? Do you go that far?
I usually roll a few putts on the carpet. It's tough because everybody does so much different stuff. I'm like, oh, maybe I should try this. Ooh, maybe I should try that, and just gets in my own head. But it's fun watching these guys.
There's not a lot of information on you out there. Like, I've talked to a couple of different people, but everybody does come back to golf, and you're basically a golf ball. Like, you're right into it. What got you into the game? And then I'll kind of go down this path about playing the sport.
My dad played, kind of just recreationally, and then joined a country club that I'm still, I still belong to back in Winnipeg, Breezy Bend. Joined there when I was like, I think I was 12 or 13, just kind of getting into it with a few buddies, and now I still play to the day. I mean, when you get the off season in hockey, you work out in the mornings or get your routines in the mornings, and then for me, it was heading to the golf course and playing golf with my buddies. So now that kind of golf's taken on like a, it seems like it's taken over the world almost. I've gotten even crazier into it.
So I've give you a choice: off the tee, driver, medium width fairway, 130 yards into to a slightly tucked pin, or a 15-foot putt. What are you most comfortable with of those three shots?
I'm hitting driver.
Yeah,
that's my strong point. I wouldn't say my wedge game and my putting's very good, or else I'd probably be a scratch golfer. I drive the ball really well, and then wedging and chip putting and short game cost me a lot of strokes.
I've only been on the golf course or around the golf course where you've been there once, and you were grinding on the putting green before you went out.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not a good thing to be grinding before you're starting your round, but it's a weakness in my game. I miss a lot of putts.
You ever catch yourself just thinking, I live in Las Vegas?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I was talking to Petro the other day. He says landing in Vegas at midnight to the Las Vegas Strip and the lights never gets old. It's true. I mean, when we land and you see where we live and kind of see those lights every single day, it never does get old.
Anniversary of the Golden Goal today. I'm sure you've seen some tweets and some information about that. Where were you 11 years ago?
I was actually watching the game at the Keystone Center in Brandon with a few of my teammates that had the game on the Jumbotron. There's like a couple hundred people there. So it's pretty cool, actually. I still remember watching that goal go in with, I think it was with Brody Melnichuk and Riley Miller.
We're 1 year out from the Olympics in 2022. Your name's been out there. You think about it?
Yeah, I think about it a lot. I mean, it's I love watching the Olympics. I've loved watching the World Juniors, World Championships, anything to do with Canadian hockey, and best on best tournaments are the best ones to watch. So, I'd do anything to play in a best on best tournament and have the opportunity to represent my country that way.
Is it a personal goal?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, obviously, the reason you're going to make that team is because you're having really good success with your club team. So I think your mindset has to be based on, you want to help your team win and help Vegas be in a spot where you're playing well enough to even be considered to play on that team.
You know who else is getting some talk about 2022 is your goalie right now.
Well, I don't see why he shouldn't. I mean, I think he's overall been the best goalie in the league so far. I don't know if the statistics back that. I'm sure they do. I mean,
they do.
Seems like he's allowed, one or two goals every game. And, he's making big saves just like yesterday in overtime. I mean, I was on the ice just watching him dive around thinking, oh, game's over. Oh, no, we're back. it was unreal. So he's been – big for us. He's been really important so far.
What did you know about him before you moved or got traded to Las Vegas?
I knew he's a jokester. I knew he's always had that great attitude. And what I've learned about him is he's more than that. He's one of the most competitive guys. Never gives you an inch in practice. Makes you earn your goals in practice, which makes us better shooters.
How much ad-libbing was there between the two of you in the commercial?
That was a fun. I guess it was 8 hours we were there.
Really?
We enjoyed ourselves. I mean, there's a lot that went into it. Obviously, Apple's has pretty high standards, so we kind of went at each other. There's a lot of goofy stuff that that didn't get put on the commercial. We had a good time.
Can you share any of that? What you guys did that didn't make the cut?
Well, I don't think they showed the Zamboni a ton, but getting him up on the Zamboni and him driving it was pretty funny. Like when he's wearing the pads, he can't fit. So like getting him up there was a struggle. And then once we got him up there, we had to keep him up there for, 10, 15 minutes. But little things. I mean, there was ones where he was, there was one thing we filmed. It was actually live. Like, okay, just go and try and score on him. And I remember scoring on him and doing a big celly, and he charged me and just buried me into the glass, which was pretty fun. They didn't end up using it, but it was pretty fun.
You ever play goal?
I begged my dad to play goalie the first game in 7 and 8 year old hockey. We rotated goalies, and after that game, I told my dad I was never playing goalie ever again.
Really? What? Okay. What made you want to play, and what happened that you didn't want to?
I think me and my brother played road hockey all the time, and it was like a fight to be the goalie, right? So, because you were never the goalie, and then the first opportunity that we had, like full pads, I wanted to play goalie so bad. So I hopped in there and I just realized I wanted to be in the action, so like 50% of the game was at the other end. I didn't like that. So I was done with it.
You guys both were the goaltender in road hockey? Cause I was going to ask you about that. And who did you guys play? Who was in your neighborhood that you guys had the games with growing up?
So it's interesting. Like my brother had his age group. I had my age group, and then most of our buddies were in between us. So like I played with Jesse Hall, Jesse Pearson, Corey Baldwin, who still plays, he plays in the East Coast. We had Alex Pym. I'm forgetting so many guys, but we had so many, Jesse Paradise would come over. We would play 3-on-3, 4-on-4, just on the street. And, the best for us was when it was snowing and they had just, no plows had come yet, and the streets still had that layer, so the goalie could make those
totally
two pad stacks and slide across. That was the best. You felt like you're a real goalie, and I think the go-to thing for us was give the shooter the glove and make the big glove save.
Would you guys play at your house, the Stones, or would you guys have to take the net down the street?
A lot of the time was at our place. We had two nets, so that was kind of
Were that family.
Yeah, we had the two nets. Me and my brother were pretty intense with that stuff. But we had some pretty, pretty intense games. Usually led to a fight, and it was always me and my brother. And it was always a little bit awkward after. So, but every time, every Saturday, we'd usually have a game, like 2 o'clock game. Game would be over, rip home, and play street hockey, and pizza, Hockey Night in Canada. That was kind of a weekly thing.
And where was the pizza from? Gondola or where?
We do like Gondola.
Yeah.
I was on a high end spot, and Boston Pizza, we were always eating there too.
Your buddy Brady,
boy with Gondola.
Yeah, exactly. Every time I go, I take a pizza back with me, and the people are always looking at me in the plane as I'm putting in the overhead bin, like, what's this goofy guy doing? So your buddy Brady, there's a lot of talk about him and Matt, and they're playing last week, and I think it was Matt said, if you guys think I'm gonna fight my brother, you're an idiot. When you and Michael played, was there was it awkward? Was it fun when you guys played in the Western League and the NHL?
Yeah, the first one was obviously like kind of nerve-wracking. I mean, it was different, never done it before. And then it kind of got into more of a routine and actually enjoyed it as it went on. And then the playoff series were always tough. There's obviously when you're, especially Calgary, Brandon, when I was playing, that was a huge rivalry, especially in the playoffs. You got guys on your team chirping at him, and then you got guys on their team chirping at me. So that was obviously awkward, but once it was over, it was more of just relief. And unfortunately, I never got to move on. He always beat me, but I guess I got one.
No,
one
you got that one.
Memorial Cup semifinal, but that was it. He beat me in two playoff series.
What was your mom and dad's approach to that?
I think it's easier for my dad. I don't think my mom liked it at all. I think she's just waiting for it to be over. I think the regular season games whether it was WHL, NHL, AHL, they really enjoy those. because it's, you know, one game. It's not going to make or break a season. But when we were playing those playoff series, it was do or die, and it wasn't that much fun for them, I don't think.
I remember meeting your parents for the first time, and I didn't know who they were until I knew who they were, because it was in 2010 at that Memorial Cup. And I think your dad had your sweater on and your mom had Michael's sweater on, and they were walking around the Keystone Center.
Yeah. I mean, I think they really enjoyed that week. You know, that was pretty neat to have both of us in there. Unfortunately, the only way that was possible is for Calgary to beat us, which sucked for us. But, you know, I think my brother, his wife now, girlfriend at the time, was there. My best buddy came. Tickets were hard to come by, so I think we only had the four. And my mom and dad, my billets, went to every game. We really enjoyed that week. Obviously, didn't really end the way either of us wanted to. Looking back on it, I don't think many teams had a chance against Windsor.
Hey, how would you describe your story, your journey from junior hockey to now being such a captain of a National Hockey League team?
I don't know. There's lots of different ways. Obviously, it was long. Yeah. But I enjoyed every minute of it. You know, going to Brandon at 16, I think there's lots of people who say that I was no good, not fast enough. But I think the management there, obviously with Kelly, trickled down to the coaching. Well, Kelly's coaching, obviously, at the time, but trickled down with that coaching staff with Chewy and then Darren Ritchie. And I think if you were to ask those guys now, I think Rich was probably the guy that said, you know, he's smart enough to be here. He should be here. And they stuck with me. I had a pretty good rookie year. I had a horrible second year with injuries and production. And then finally, once I got my opportunity at 18 and 19, that's when I was able to develop into the player. And then moving into Binghamton, and I think Brian Murray really understood what I could become. I think they could have rushed me into the NHL right away, but I don't think I would have been, you know, ready. I don't think I would have developed, you know, into the two-way player. I don't think I would have had my – I don't think I would have got been as good offensively if I would have been rushed in. I think I would have just been like a third line guy playing defense. And I think I owe a lot to Brian Murray who saw that.
What does that time frame, what does that allow you to do? How does that make you into a first liner instead of a third liner?
Well, I think my first year in Binghamton, you know, I learned how to penalty kill. I learned how to do all these little things. And then my second year, you know, I was first line, you know, playing on the power play, playing penalty kill, kind of playing all the situations. And, you know, it's tough when you see like you know, say, you know, a guy get hurt on the NHL fourth line and you don't get called up. You're wondering, why am I not getting called up? Why am I not getting called up? And then Bobby Ryan got hurt at the end of the season. And then I finally got called up. And, you know, I was playing on the second line in Ottawa, given it a chance, playing on the power play. And I think that was pretty cool to look back and see, like, they had that vision for me, you know, playing meaningful minutes in Binghamton, you know, scoring, getting my offensive game tuned in. And once I got called up, not just, you know, playing 6 or 7 minutes, but actually getting an opportunity to perform. You know, I think that was, you know, whether it was Brian Murray, Randy Lee, Pierre Dorion, those guys had that vision for me and that helped me.
The whole skating story, like, is that overblown at all? Is that just becoming urban legend? About you struggling as a skater back in when you're 16, 17 years old, because that's what it feels like to me, because I watch you now and first line player, captain, NHL team, Stanley Cup contender.
If I'm being totally honest, I didn't like working out. I wanted to play golf. So I think with my trainer back in Winnipeg, Richard Burr, I started training with NHL caliber players. You know, I started with Dustin Boyd and Ryan Garbutt, and then guys, my brother, who is a much stronger than me, getting him. And then, started getting with guys my own age who had already played in the NHL with, you know, Cody Eakin and all these guys. And I started realizing, you know what, if I just, you know, train with these guys and get a little bit stronger, that's going to make me a better skater in the long run. I mean, I do think that I don't think it was overblown. I was just weak. I wasn't a bad skater. I was just weak. So, you know, I'd be fine for 15 seconds. Once I got tired, I couldn't bend my legs. And now I can sustain it.
Dave Gosher calls you the Larry Bird of hockey. Great at everything. And first of all, for those that don't know, Dave Gosher's the Vegas play-by-play announcer on television. Secondly, he should come up with a more modern analogy. I don't know who that is. But what do you think your best skill is, Mark?
Reading the play and intercepting pucks, obviously. I think I do. I think that's my, you know, that's my greatest attribute is the ability to read what other players do, whether that's you know, the other team or my own players. I think that's where I shine the best is the anticipating the play.
You use a long stick. Have you always done that?
Yeah, actually, it's a funny story. You know, I got to Brandon and I used just a standard length stick, and we had a game in Moose Jaw. I was 16 years old. We had a lot of injuries and I played on the first line for the first time ever. And I was playing with Andrew Clark and Matt Lowry, and I got a breakaway against Moose Jaw. I made a great move, but the goalie got there ahead of my stick. And after the game, we ended up winning the game. So we were in good spirits. And after the game, Kelly actually came in and he said, "I think you should add at least 2 inches to that stick." And I was like, "Oh, I don't know." And then I ended up doing it. And to this day, I think that that move that I made in Moose Jaw, I make a lot now, and it actually does work. It's weird, what? But.
Do you remember the goalie at all? I'd love to know who the goalie was that influenced your career so much by making a save.
I honestly think it might have been Kyle Birch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I actually think it was. Because I think he came to Moose Jaw at the start of that season. Like, I could be wrong.
You offer one of these great quotes talking about being an entertainer. And we all love the fans, and you guys play for the fans. But you've said this a couple of times. We are entertainers. And I haven't heard that phrase from too many players before. Where does that come from?
Well, I mean, that's the way I look at sports. You know, that's the main thing that I watch is live entertainment. And I'm entertained by it. I enjoy it. You know, people pay very good money to come watch us play hockey, and they enjoy to watch us play hockey. And I think that's kind of in the back of your mind before, or at least it is in mine before every game, is these people are paying to come watch me play. So I better, you know, I think as a team, let's try and give them the best show we can.
Do you try and prepare people that come and watch you play in Vegas who have never been to T-Mobile Arena for what's going to happen in that place when there's fans in there?
I honestly try to tame it down just so that they are, you know, shocked when they first get there. I always say, you know, you're going to love it. It's great. But I want them to kind of come in with that low expectations and just be completely wowed, which that was me the first time I played there. I was kind of just looking around the whole time. It was awesome.
Did you get off the plane really with nothing with you when you got traded here because it happened so fast?
I had a backpack. That was the only thing that made it. I flew out of Ottawa. I was supposed to leave. I think I got traded at about 3 o'clock, pretty well 3 o'clock. I parked. I went to the rink that morning. You know, obviously I had no idea what was going to happen. I parked my car and sat about 2 minutes away from the rink and just waited. And I think all you guys kind of know the process that happened. It took a little bit longer than anticipated just based on what had to get done. And then once everything went down, I think it was around 3 o'clock. I had to go back to the rink, grab my stuff. And I think my flight was at 5:30 or 6. So we just got back from a long road trip and didn't unpack my stuff. Just grabbed it, rifled a few more things in, and then went off to the airport. And flight was supposed to leave at 5:30, I believe, from Ottawa, and flight was supposed to leave at 7:30 or 8 from Toronto. And we did not leave Ottawa, I don't think, until I want to say like 6:30. So I landed in Toronto at 7:30, ran as fast as I could. The guy gives me the biggest break of all time. He stamps my visa in quickly and tells me to start sprinting. And I sprint, get to the gate just in time for them to tell me that I'm probably, my stuff is probably not going to make it, but they let me on the flight. And I land in Vegas with nothing but an iPhone charger and my headphones and laptop.
Wow.
So and I got there, so I was happy.
Yeah. And Kelly McCrimmon greets you. And as we wrap it up here, you got to play for Kelly, and then you got to play for Kelly again a couple of weeks ago. Was that weird? Was it fun? Was it different? Like,
It was fun for me. Yeah. I think Kelly enjoyed it too. I think,
you know, he'll never admit that.
He'll never admit it. But I mean, I watched the replay in overtime. He was standing on the bench. He got up there. He was into it. So I think he brought back some memories for him. But not much changed. I mean, he was pretty dialed in. He was running back up and down the bench like he did in Brandon. The bench is bigger in Brandon though, so I think he wasn't used to the smaller bench because they're across from each other in Brandon, so we got those massive benches. That was a nice perk playing in the Keystone.
You're right. When does the switch get flipped to turn on Mark Stone's game face?
I usually arrive to the rink around 4. Get a little bit of ankle treatment from one of the trainers just because it feels good. And go have a little snack, go grab a snack and watch a few hockey games. That's one of the perks of playing on the West Coast that I love so much is from, 4 o'clock until our first meeting, you kind of watch all the other games, which obviously I love watching hockey. So I'll watch a bunch of those games. And then once we have our first meeting, I think it's 5:30, it's go time.
I love it, but I also find myself at 10 o'clock going, when's the next game? Because we're used to having games in the Eastern time zone.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you mean there's no more games?
That's true.
Some Manitoba trivia for you. I'm going to fire some at you. Where's the halfway tree?
Okay.
Do you know where that is? The halfway tree?
I do, yeah. Just after Portage.
You're right. The Lone Tree.
Portage and Lane Brennan. Yeah.
You got it.
I look for it every time.
Where, do you know what the streets are at Confusion Corner in Winnipeg?
My God, I don't know why I'm blanking out here.
Stafford, is Stafford one of them, or is Corden one of them?
I don't think it's Corden.
Actually, I don't know that one, but I just Confusion Corner.
I have it in my. I can see it right now. I can see Confusion Corner because a Confusion Corner grill.
You're right.
I can see it right in my head, but I don't know the streets. I'm bad
for people that don't know what's an intern and what's an outturn.
An intern and an outturn.
Curling.
Oh, intern. Yeah, outturn. My parents are dialed in right now to Scotty's.
Yes.
An intern. Trying to think of like the spin.
Yeah.
I know. I'm the item.
That's exactly
this
it.
Way and the outturns that way.
Yeah. Right? You nailed it. Mark, I know this is a challenge because you're jam packed and it's a crazy time, but Darren Ritchie, you mentioned him earlier and he thinks the world of you. And he said the same thing about you just had that brain, that hockey brain, and they needed to keep you around when you were younger. So you were, you're right on point there and appreciate it. Keep it going. And thanks for the time again.
Thanks, Darren. Appreciate it.
So just a little bit of context as we come out from Mark Stone. How about that, like, setup? Pretty cool house. Like, Bobby, let's bring you in here. You're sitting on the East Coast, and you're watching that background with the sun and a Sunday afternoon, and it's Las Vegas. Tell me you aren't jealous of that.
I was jealous. It was tough to watch. I watched it on Sunday as we're doing the interview, and I'm looking outside and seeing the rain come down, and I'm seeing him in this beautiful home, bright, as sunny as can be, and I was jealous.
Yeah, like floor-to-ceiling windows. And the only thing I was disappointed in, Mark will appreciate this, is he has 3 dogs, a couple of retrievers. I was disappointed because we kind of had a theme going a little bit with dogs in the podcast and the chirp at the Millard. I thought maybe the pups might make an appearance because before the interview, that's all Mark and I talked about was our dogs. He's got 3. I've got 3. What are they like? Where are they from? He's got a rescue from Northern Manitoba and a couple of retrievers. And I was waiting for the pups to walk in.
Waiting for the puppy cameo. Did not get the puppy cameo. We were not as fortunate. Pierre-Luc Dubois showed off the bulldog. Did not get that from Mark Stone. But nonetheless, loved what he was bringing to the table and enjoyed the conversation.
If you're watching on YouTube and if you're listening, we do have this on YouTube. Every episode, we've had John Cooper walk around his house and show us artwork. We've had Pierre-Luc Dubois do his thing with the puppy. Behind me, I always try and have a jersey from the player that we're talking to. I didn't have anything from New Jersey, oddly enough. No pun intended, but I do have a Golden Knights sweater in the background here. And above that is a We Kings sweater. It was the special edition sweater that the We Kings wore in that referenced Memorial Cup that Mark Stone played in Brandon in 2010. I thought he might reference that, but he's probably getting glare on his computer from watching it from that beautiful sunroom.
Now, is Mark Stone from the same exact hometown as you, Darren?
No, he's from Winnipeg. He's from Winnipeg. I'm from Brandon. But I worked in Winnipeg, and that's where he grew up. And then he played in Brandon. So we weren't born in the same places, but we've overlapped a lot. And one of my greatest possessions, and it's not handy, I should have had it handy here, is a Mark Stone bobblehead doll from the Brandon Wheat Kings that my dad sent me for Christmas one year. And my dad is the biggest Wheat King fan of all time. Like, if you take away weather and the Wheat Kings, my dad and I wouldn't have anything to talk about. it would just be silence on the other bit. Dad, where are you? And so he's really excited that the Wheat Kings are getting up going, and he absolutely loves Mark Stone, the biggest Mark Stone outside from Rob and Jackie, Mark's parents that I know of. But yeah, he's a cool guy. Talking about the like squeezing Marc-Andre Fleury behind the Zamboni, and I also loved, because we kind of get away from in hockey. You know, you've seen the famous promo like we. And it's so emotional. We talking about the team of hockey players, but I loved that Mark admitted the Olympics are on his radar. He wants to. He loves playing for Team Canada, but the Olympics, best on best, and I just appreciate his honesty in that part. And being an entertainer, that was cool too.
You can tell he was almost foaming out the mouth when you brought up the Olympics and playing for the national team. And it is refreshing to see. And hopefully we get an opportunity to see NHL players in the Olympics. I think all NHL fans are rooting for that. Hopefully we can get that done.
He can pound the golf ball too. Like, we're talking not just like get it out there, but 300 plus. He hits it a ton and can hit it pretty straight. And having watched him around, like, he just, the passion that he has, he basically didn't train for a while because he liked playing over at Breezy Bend so much. So that was a cool conversation. A guy that he could end up playing against in Beijing is Patrick Kane. Have you been following Patrick Kane's season this year? And I know he had the big goal this past weekend, Bobby. And you probably want to talk about that and 400 goals and chasing down the all-time goal list for American-born players. But like, Chicago is nowhere without Patrick Kane. And dare I say, into his 30s, Patrick Kane is having the best year of his career right now. And I got to know Patrick Kane when I was doing the old Hockey Central at Noon show with Doug McLean and Nick Kiprios. And we found out through a trip to the Stanley Cup Finals, I think it was the year that they played the Tampa Bay Lightning, 2015, that Patrick Kane's game day routine when he's at home in Chicago is morning skate, grab lunch, and I think it was with Seabrook, but it was with another teammate. He'd sit down in front of the TV, and he would watch Hockey Central at noon, which is 11 o'clock in Chicago. And he'd just get a kick out of how the guys would beat up on me, or they would argue, or Doug and Nick would fight. And that was his routine. So we kind of stumbled on that, and it became a thing. Patrick became a regular guest on the show. We call him Patrick from Chicago. Like, you're going to line one. Patrick from Chicago is on the phone. Welcome. Oh, welcome. Long time listener, first time caller. But he would phone every, like, probably once every couple of months like that. And then he came in studio. You love this, Bobby. He came in studio, and it was right after the roof collapsed on us during a live show. The ceiling in our studio fell down almost.
Wow.
It almost really hurt Doug McLean. Somehow it missed him. But all the sound baffling came down. No boss is called. No boss. We continued the entire show, and no boss is called. But it was right after that. So Patrick wears a safety vest and a hard hat, comes in with a ladder, and does a walk-on, because the Blackhawks were in Toronto to play the Maple Leafs, does this walk-on with a ladder, and just joins us on the program and sat down and shot the breeze with us. He's it was a, like, I say this a lot with a certain guest, like Stone, you see a different side of them when guys are comfortable with you. And that was, I never thought Patrick Kane would be that guy. And so then we fast forward to now, like he's top three in NHL scoring right now without Kirby Doc, without Jonathan Toews. Chicago Blackhawks fighting for a playoff position. We didn't think they had any goaltending. And Kevin Lankinen's been awesome. Malcolm Subban's playing great right now. Duncan Keith is Duncan Keith. Like, wild. I didn't think there was an ounce of chance that the Blackhawks would contend for a playoff spot. But thanks to Patrick Kane and DeBrincat and Strome, and the guys are playing well. But he's on another level right now, man.
400th goal the other night. Yep. So the milestone. 600 goals. Is it possible if he plays to 40 and he averages around, I don't know, 19, 20 goals a year, it'll get him close. The question is he going to play till 40? Mike Madonna, he's 32. Mike Madonna, of course, has 562 goals. He's the USA leader, born leader in goals. I think Kane will pass him. The question is 600. What do you think?
I think he can do it. I know he can do it. It's just, does he want to play until he's 40 right. years old? And where's he playing when he's 40 years old? Right. I would have thought if he was playing this well in the Blackhawks, like if it was a regular year and is a little bit different to make the playoffs, would they consider moving him without Toews, without Doc? Where does he end up? I don't think he's going anywhere. He's not going anywhere right now, but I think he can do it. That's a lot to ask though, because he's generally a setup guy. Like 40 goals a year. You're going to have one of those just crazy years. And he's having one of those crazy years right now, but we're only going to play 56 games, Bob. So you can't max out on that awesome year. What's more likely that he gets to 600 or Alexander Ovechkin breaks Wayne Gretzky's all-time goals list? Because they're both kind of in the same timeline right now.
They're interesting to compare.
Yeah, I would say Ovi breaks Wayne's record before Kane gets to 600. But that would, I don't know whether there's odds on that. There's odds everywhere. I'm in Las Vegas. But I don't know what's more likely in that round, because Kane taking the leadership role offensively on this team from a goal-scoring front is something I didn't anticipate.
You brought up odds. Mm-hmm. You're Mr. Vegas. You're in the casinos every night. I know you like to get out there. Every single
only
night.
Between midnight and 6, Bob.
So how about this? Odds
okay.
for Patrick Kane to win the Hart Trophy. The season opened, he was 55-1. Of course, the way he's playing right now, he's 23-1 to win the Hart Trophy.
Really? Now, I don't gamble on hockey. I can't gamble on hockey. But if I be careful how I phrase it. But that 23-1
23-1
is extraordinary. I can't believe it's still 23. He's top. He's second in league scoring as we record this right now. With 11 goals and going and gaining some confidence. 23. Would you not take 23-1 on anything? I think I got 20-1 on Dustin Johnson to win the Masters, and I cashed in on that.
Very nice.
Which was pretty good. And I thought that was, those odds were kind of high for a player like Dustin Johnson. 23-1, the way Patrick Kane's going right now. And I'll give you a reason why. I think that 23-1 is a great buy right now, because the Hart Trophy is most valuable to your team. And we already know that McDavid and Matthews are having great seasons and they're lights out in the North Division. They're getting all the attention. But a year ago, McDavid didn't win the Hart Trophy because he was second to a guy on his own team. So we know that somebody can beat Connor McDavid. It's not out of the realm of possibility. Number two is the most valuable to your team line that everybody will circle back to. I guarantee you, Bobby, wait a month and a half, and that's going to be the narrative coming out. Who's most valuable to their team? Is it McDavid? Well, he's got Draisaitl. Is it Matthews? Well, he's got Marner. Who does Patrick Kane have on his team right now? In that, no offense to Stromey and we got Keith and the
goaltending,
like DeBrinket. DeBrinket's awesome. Loved DeBrinket, but like you're talking about a guy putting on his shoulder, and that narrative, most valuable to your team, takes that 23-1 number that you just threw out, and once everybody realizes that, that number's coming down, and that 55-1 was. Everybody should be 55-1 at the start of the year because we have so many great players in the league that could possibly put themselves in this position. Like Draisaitl, who knows what he was a year ago, and he ends up winning it 23-1, no brainer, Bobby. Like somebody do it just so you can send us a note and say thank you at the end of the year. Like throw $20 on. That's what I put on DJ. To win the Masters and cashed in on it. So it's a no brainer. Please do it.
This is an organic segment. This is Gambling Corner with Mr. Vegas, Darren Millard. The 23-1 on Patrick Kane to win the Hart Trophy is a good wager at this moment, March 1st. Now, listen, the odds might have shifted. I think that was like 226-21. You could have got it at 23-1. Maybe it went down a little bit, but even if it's 20-1, it's a wager, right?
And I've only ever placed one bet in my life, and I've won that bet. So take it from me right now when it comes to advice at the window. Just don't bet more than you can afford, please.
Right.
That little asterisk. If you have a gambling problem, please seek help, and don't bet more than you can afford.
Absolutely. Okay, I want to hear your thoughts on the Canadiens now.
All right, so they make the change. Claude Julien is replaced by Dominique Ducharme. Dominique Ducharme is one of those next generation coaches, strategist, communicator, just a guy that has worked his way through major junior hockey, Team Canada World Junior level. His resume is outstanding. Young guy, too. I love it when the coaches are younger than me now. I really do appreciate that. That's refreshing as well. But Dom, I've enjoyed my time around Dom, and I know people who have worked with Dom and are big fans of Dominique Ducharme. It doesn't matter how good of a coach he is if he doesn't get saves. So let's start there. The goaltending hasn't been up to par with the Montreal Canadiens. That's one of the reasons why the coaching change was made. And Dominique Ducharme will have to lean on Stefan Waite if they're going to have any chance of turning this around, and if he has any chance of removing the interim tag from his coaching title right now and becoming the full-time head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. Look, when he was brought in by Marc Bergevin, everybody knew. It was like when Pete DeBoer said the other day, when we hired Bob Bugner back again, I knew that Bob Bugner was eventually going to be the guy that would replace me. We all knew that Dominique Ducharme would be the guy that would replace Claude Julien at the helm of the Montreal Canadiens. But they have to find a way to be better defensively. And I don't think it's as much to be better defensively as it is to get a couple of saves. Jake Allen's playing well. Does Dominique Ducharme have the rope to go into a rotation to buy Carey Price some time to get settled? I don't know. But here's the real reason why the coaching change was made. Because last year they were just got into the bubble and ended up pulling off the upset against the Pittsburgh Penguins. There was a good chance change was going to be made last year. Then the pause happened, and then you take a step back. Maybe you hold off because you're waiting to see what's going to happen. Well, they get into the playoffs. You're not going to throw a coach that's never handled his team and make him the coach into the playoffs. So Claude Julien gets that time. They win the series against Pittsburgh. They take Philadelphia to 7 games. Don't forget that. You can't make the change then. So you give Claude Julien another little bit of runway this year at the start of this year. He gets off to a fantastic start. Now, Bobby, if they would have stumbled out of the gate, there would have been patience there because they changed half their team this summer and fall. There would have been patience there. And if you would have flipped the two starts, the stumble at the end as opposed to the great start, Claude Julien's still there. He is. But because the expectations from adding players and then the expectations from the amazing start created this falsehood that they're ready to go from 24th in the National Hockey League standings to challenging for a playoff spot. And the other reason why there's raised expectations is it's an all-Canadian division. They're the Bleu Blanc Rouge. They're the greatest team in NHL history. It's an all-Canadian division. This is a chance of a lifetime for the seven Canadian teams to really stake their claim. And Montreal Canadian fans are saying, we're the best in NHL history. We better darn well compete for a playoff spot. And that raised expectations as well. And when they stumbled and weren't able to compete, then you saw the change. But I don't know whether they're a playoff team. It's kind of muddy right now in the Canadian division. They may find their footing, but how do you go from being in the same league as Ottawa last year in totally rebuilding to being in a conversation with Toronto? Now, I thought they'd take a big step, but I'm not sure that they're a top four team, realistically. And it's a hockey mad market. That's why expectations are raised. But I don't know whether it's necessarily fair. Claude Julien was, there was going to be a change made then anyway, but I don't know whether the change results in a playoff spot.
And their first few games here with the new coach, usually, it's not a guarantee. Usually you change the coach and you get a bump, similar to the chirp bump, where all of our guests come on. And
see Nico Hischier?
Mm-hmm.
Last week, got a couple, like, flying. You're right.
So I think what we have to do is I need to go out, reach out to the Canadians. I think we need to probably get one of their young players on, right? They get the chirp bump. Okay, maybe they get a bit of a coaching bump after the first few losses under the new coach, and then away they go. And it'll be interesting. I still think that they're going to get into the playoffs, but I'm not as comfortable about it as I was when they first came flying out of the gates. I don't know where you land on that. Are they a playoff team in that Canadian division?
Okay, who do they beat out? Winnipeg's going to make the playoffs by the looks of it. Is it Calgary? Is it Edmonton? Who do they beat out?
Calgary.
And I don't – yeah, so Calgary. Well, I think. compare their rosters. And there's heat in Calgary right now too, significant heat. And that's, you may see changes made across the National Hockey League in this truncated season. And 80% of them may be in Canada because of everybody wants to be that top dog in the land of the loonies. So I don't know whether they're better than Calgary, but yeah, let's give them a shot. Let's reach out. And like Tyler Toffoli, his dad and I are buddies. We're close.
Okay.
He'll just send me random texts every now and then, Rob. So I would love to get Tyler on. Maybe we could have Rob on too. Little father son. I'm not the producer. I just give you great ideas and you turn them down. Okay. That's all that happens on this podcast. But let's reach out. We owe it to the Montreal Canadiens to give them a shot in the arm.
I'm on it. And before we wrap up the show today, it's March 1st. It's Gender Equality Month here in the National Hockey League. The first ever women's hockey game was played at MSG on Sunday night. We are going to sprinkle in some wonderful female guests this month, so stay tuned for that. And hopefully I can go do my job and get a Montreal Canadian here. We can provide the Canadian with the chirp bump, and then the Canadians can, you know, start their quest to get back into the playoff mix. And it'll be a great month of March.
We want you to like, subscribe, please. It's the end. We remind you at the start. Now it's the end of the podcast. As soon as you're done here, like, subscribe, and leave a rating, because that is the way that we make this thing go up the charts. And it makes the whole thing, makes our boss happy. I was trying to find a different way to phrase that. Just it pleases our boss.
Well, smash the like button, smash the subscribe button, and just keep listening. Tell your friends, tell your family. Darren, you got a game tonight, Monday night.
Got a game.
Vegas, yep, Monday. Minnesota should be a good game.
It's battle for first place in the West. Who saw that coming? Kaprizov is going great, and Marc-Andre Fleury is outstanding. Another guy that we talked about, he's leading the Vezina Trophy, and we'll see what happens. But Minnesota and Vegas, the last game that Vegas was going to play, the season was paused last year. They were in St. Paul. The first game with fans for Vegas is against the Minnesota Wild. There's a little bit of synergy there. Looking forward to bringing you the TV broadcast. And I love it when Bobby sends me notes while I'm on the air doing the TV thing too. So keep doing that, that Bobby. If you like to know more about what's going on around here, give us suggestions. Hashtag Chirp Mallard on Twitter, or my DMs are wide open. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. Click that like button, leave us a response, and please be safe. And we'll talk to you next week on The Chirp with Darren Millard.